pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
And welcome back to the second hour of the Jeff Poor Show. Big show planned for you still to go. That's State Senator Doug Jones running for re-election. Joins us at the bottom of the hour. We have his opponent, Tommy Tuberville, coming up tomorrow, 10:30 as well. So make sure you tune in for that and stay tuned for Senator Jones. At the 11 o'clock hour, we have Baron Coleman, Auburn radio host, going to talk about some things going on in the political world and our usual Wednesday guest, BL Hammer News, Sean Ross. Please stay tuned if you would. Some other things going on. Football season still seems to be a big deal. The SEC earlier this week put out their schedule. Not crazy about the December 5th game. It feels so anticlimactic. But I understand why you got to. I understand why you got to do that extra week at the very end, given the late start. But Tuscaloosa Mayor Walt Maddox. We talked about him yesterday. If there's somebody in the state that's really enforcing all these mandates with social distancing and mask, it's the city of Tuscaloosa and under Mayor Maddox. Well, he's on CNN with Anderson Cooper talking about football season. And didn't realize this. Maybe I should have. But the city of Tuscaloosa gets a direct economic impact of $200 million during football season. That's quite a shot in the arm. And without football season, this probably goes for Auburn University and the city of Auburn as well. Really, what happens to a lot of these businesses, because they count on this year to year to year. And I would think, you know, maybe some of it is contingent on the success of the team that year or the opponents that they have coming in. I mean, all of this kind of adds up, but coronavirus is really going to it's going to throw a hitch in things. So it's my understanding 20,000 is kind of the limit they're going to put on the cap on a Bryant-Denny fans in attendance. 100,000 seat stadium at Bryant-Denny capacity? 109,000 people. What do you think that black market's going to look like? What do you think a Alabama football ticket's going to go for this year if only a fifth of the capacity is available? What is that going to look like there, Sean? You're the Alabama fan here.
Yeah, so right now, you know, we have, I think as of last night, dropped all our season tickets for the family. They come through my wife's family, and we had a bunch of them. But you've set seats.
I sat
before
with you at the Iron Bowl. Pretty good seats.
Pretty incredible seats there. Something that they've been season ticket holders since the early 70s. Takes a long time to get to that point. We're not taking any of our season tickets this year. As a family, zero. So those go back into the pool. Now, we have been given guarantees that we're back in next year. And one of the reactions was, you know, like, early season. So my wife, who is the biggest fan in the house, said, I don't want to go sit in the stands with a mask on. She said, that's going to be miserable. You know how hot the early season games are? I mean, you've been out there just baking in the sun in a September game or, heck, sometimes an October game. And she said, just not going to do it. So I wonder how many of us there are, you know, that are going to back off of it and maybe put more tickets in the bank. I don't know. I don't know what that price ends up being. I don't know what the demand. Will the demand be the same? Will it be reduced by, you know, 80%? I don't know.
I think the diehards will go and they'll pay whatever it takes to get in.
Yeah. Maybe. I like some of the stuff in 2020, I don't know. I just know that individual family, which is a bunch of diehard Bama fans and graduates, the University of Alabama, we're not taking our season tickets this year.
But you reduce the supply in the market by.
Sure. It's 80%. Just where is the demand? If the demand stays steady or if the demand is reduced to the level, you know, less than 80% reduction, then you're right.
I'm sure
you're
going
right.
to be on both sides. You know, demand,
StubHub will be popping.
Demand won't be what it always is. But on the other side of that, will it be as much as they've limited capacity? I would think there's going to be more people wanting tickets than there will be capacity. Obviously, there always is, but just how much? Where is that equation? What's the balance there? I got to be thinking people...
What do you think the tickets are going for? Do you think... we're looking at the first game.
What's the first game? Is it against...
What Patsy do we have? I don't know.
No, because it's all SEC, so...
Yeah. Yeah, but I think we have... Oh, we have Missouri. Yeah, we have Missouri.
Oh,
we were talking about Missouri last night.
That might not be the big draw. But we talk about an Iron Bowl or a Tennessee game or something like that. Now, I'm not up on the Alabama schedule, forgive me, but...
you know that one.
The marquee, Alabama, I know one because it's on the Auburn schedule.
And then, you know, both of all teams have another game after the big rivalry.
Which is weird.
I think Auburn's playing Texas A&M after
I'm not big on that.
It's just different.
I don't want to do that. I don't really care.
Because there's not going to be... Usually that's where the SEC championship game would be.
I mean, it's like this, though. If Auburn beats Alabama, which it's probably going to be difficult in Tuscaloosa, but I don't want to have to go watch them play Texas A&M.
Right. It's what they've given us. Beggars can't be choosers right now. You could be a fan
I just
of a
dropped
team
that
from
game.
The
we don't need that
Pac-12
game.
Or the
Why
Big
do we
10?
Need that extra game? Just
because what it probably means in dollars for every game that's played.
I am skeptical we're going to get that far, Sean. I don't think that the season's going to go all the way.
Well, I can't change if it isn't going to go that way. But as we prepare here at the radio station as the Auburn affiliate, I mean, talking with Brad Law and the people at Auburn, they are full speed ahead. We've got the coaches show starts September 17th. So Tiger Talk, September 17th, that'll be the first one, and Tiger Talk Overtime, our local show with Doug Holton, to follow that. Starting, we have the Auburn Updates, Auburn Sports Today, starting on September 13th. They're full go. I mean, I've been in, people don't realize I have jobs other than just talking on these shows, and that's a big conversation we've been working through. We're good to go.
Well, here's a question for you. Do you, if you're in these stadiums, you pipe in some crowd noise or something?
It's weird to hear the whether you're looking at a baseball game, which doesn't bother me as much as watching any of the NBA games where you can hear the squeaking of the shoes.
Right.
Reminds me of high school. But I don't want to pipe in fan noise, but they may be smarter than me and say, you got to do this to get people engaged. I mean, it's so artificial. Are you a fan noise piped in person?
Not at all. And like, we were talking to somebody the other day about it, Matt Simpson, who was sitting in the studio mm-hmm. talking about that he thinks that's why ratings are down for
these because
sports.
People don't have it, but then you could say, okay, if sitcoms have laugh tracks in them,
right?
So there is precedent set that people need cues or from others to know when to cheer. I could be watching. How many times has the volume been off on the TV for some reason? And there's a play happens in a game and I'm cheering. I didn't need to hear anybody else cheer.
And you understand that, but I guess it adds some kind of theatric element to it or something that you just need that I don't get it. I've never been big on the TV side of it. I prefer, I guess it's because of CBS commentators and ESPN commentators and the SEC Network commentators always kind of make my skin crawl, but I always prefer the radio.
As we say around here, we have spent the money over the years to time sync our broadcast. Now, to point something out here, there are so many ways to get a game anymore.
Well, all the
we had to get in the middle.
Every cable provider's all the different, because I've watched it on satellite and had get on cable at the same time. That's what I do. I watch TV for a living.
Right.
My job is with Breitbart, and I watch TV and monitor radio.
It looks like some kind of action movie when they go into the headquarters and they got all the screens all over the world. That's what Jeff's house looks like with monitors.
But on game day, it's a it comes into use because I could watch like five different football games instead of MSNBC, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and all the different channels, CNBC, Fox Business. I could turn it on different football games. But over time, there's been times when I've maxed out on the cable boxes I could have in mm-hmm. my house. So we would get a satellite dish installed and get DirecTV right. and have a couple of TVs there. And you know,
there's a difference in time.
You see, there's a big difference a lot of times.
So what we did here, when we started being the Auburn affiliate, we had that issue. And people were like, because what you were saying, I'm getting back to, most folks that are a fan, I like to listen to our broadcast, the radio broadcast. If you're watching the Auburn game.
I prefer, because that's what I do. And I'll even when I'm in the market, I'll tune it in to 106.5.
Yeah.
and I'll have it playing while the game's on, because you just want to hear kind of, you get better sideline reporting.
Absolutely.
And you get more, you're more in clue with what's going on from an Auburn fan's perspective when you listen to the Auburn radio broadcast versus Gary Danielson or whatever talking about where
agree. And
the great places to eat in Auburn. Like, I have been to Auburn. I know where to go.
We don't need that little vignette.
Yeah, that's fine. Do that for the people in Kansas or whatever. But that's just not
right.
I have a specialized.
And I'm the same way on the as a graduate and fan of the University of Alabama. I like to hear that broadcast too. So what we had to do here, though, we had to get a machine, and we had to delay the radio because it's ahead
right.
of the TV. But the problem is, when I did this, we started, you know, I did it and I said, okay, we'll sync it up with TV. And then I started getting emails and texts from people who said, hey, I get it from this cable provider or this satellite provider or this. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And like chasing my tail trying to figure out. So what we did is, there's about from 4 to 8 seconds that it seems to be the delay is most prominent. So we got in the middle of that with our
right.
show. I'm trying to serve the most number of people to do that and be as close as I can instead of just picking one provider and syncing up perfectly with them. So just a little inside technical backroom, you know, discussion.
But you'd be amazed. So my wife and I, we went to Baltimore at Camden Yards there, and there's a hotel, and you could get a hotel room that looks into the stadium and watch the game.
That's cool.
So
That's cool.
We went up there for the Braves and the Orioles and had made our little hotel room a party suite.
Yeah.
You know, liquor and snacks and all of that, right? It's just like a luxury box. It's a little bit further than, it's not the best view, but you could watch a baseball game.
That is cool.
But have the TV on the cable broadcast, there's a huge difference.
Like 10 seconds, 20?
No, we're talking maybe like 30, 40 seconds.
Oh wow!
It's significant. It's a significant delay, because we'd be watching a game and want to see it, and we'd have to wait for it,
and
then,
there
then
it
plays on the Masson.
It's like
whatever.
You get a replay,
right?
It's
now great. That might just be for the Orioles broadcast in Baltimore, but there is a significant delay. So I would think there's probably a little bit of a delay with radio, but what's happening?
The radio is ahead of TV.
Right.
I know this because I work on the stuff each year for so the radio is ahead of the TV. So we got to slow. What we do is we got a box in there basically that bounces the sound around and delays it for the number of times before it lets it through our signal. So we take the signal in from the network and we slow it down by, we don't slow the actual audio down. We bounce it around, then we let it go to try to sync it up with what people are watching, because we know so many people listen to FM Talk 106.5 while they're watching the game. And this year is going to be bigger than ever. I mean, you have the reduction in number of seats. People, you just physically can't go to the game.
Right.
You know? I mean, there's not going to be a ticket available. Or you're going to be like, you know, the missus who said, I'm not wearing a mask out there, you know, in the heat in September.
We did the Talladega race, that first sporting event. They made us wear the mask. And, you know, you could be in a group. But they had seats. And it didn't seem like that bad being in the heat. You could have your beverage here,
right.
And they wouldn't make you sit there wearing the mask.
You'd have to have a straw.
It would be something like that. You weren't necessarily stuck to the sitting there with the mask all the time. But All right, guys.
Call my house and tell her.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Hand me my hat, excuse me, man, but where's the door? From Carolina down to Georgia, smell the jasmine and magnolia. Sleepy sweet home, Alabama, roll tide, roll.
Hey, welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Coming up in the next segment, NYSE Senator Doug Jones will be with us, running for re-election on November 3rd against Republican nominee, former Auburn head football coach Tommy Tuberville. We get into a bunch of stuff, this Postal Service issue. Get into that with him. We'll also talk about the Democrat convention. We're going to discuss that. He got to speak at the Democrat convention. Football. See what he thinks about getting into football. I think that's a good for a lot of people, it's a litmus test about, well, you know, what really impacts my life. It's not Medicaid expansion or any tax rates. Oh, football. We got football or not. We'll talk about that with Senator Jones. That's coming up in the next segment. Something we're going to get to later in the program. This is why I asked Barrett Coleman to come on. Attorney General Steve Marshall was on my friend Matt Murphy and Andrea Lindenberg's radio show in Birmingham yesterday, talking about really at what point do we start rolling back some of these restrictions, and when does the governor's executive authority, just how far can it go? And he was explaining this, that there are limits to an emergency order, the powers the executive has. I think they're going to remake all of this whenever the legislature has the opportunity to. But there is, right now, there are limits, if you look at it. And he was explaining there are, if you, they're keeping an eye on COVID-19 cases, infection rates, testing, hospitalizations, and at just what point is it necessary for the governor to continue a mask mandate? So it's, you know, that was always my question with this. It was never really clear to me from Governor Ivey. It was kind of a lecture, like we're high school kids and why we must do this and be good little mask wearers. But at what point can we say, oh, we don't need to do this anymore? Where is the light at the end of the tunnel? What are we striving to accomplish? That was never laid out for us. But as Marshall was saying, for law enforcement to actually execute these orders, enforce these orders, well, they understand there's a legal basis here. Now, if KIV said, I believe Marshall referred to it for the Birmingham audience, said KIV couldn't use the COVID-19 emergency order to put a 35-mile-per-hour speed limit on Highway 280 in Birmingham. That would be outside the parameters of the emergency order. So all of this is being watched and kept in check. But for now, when he issues these opinions and when he has to defend these laws because they get challenged in court, He's making sure that there's a legal basis to defend them. So what had happened was three residents from Jackson County up in Scottsboro, I believe, two sheriffs, former sheriff's deputies, and a realtor up there in Scottsboro filed a suit against the state of Alabama, said the mask mandate was unconstitutional, that the governor didn't really have this authority. They filed it in a Montgomery County court, and the judge threw the suit out, said that indeed there was a legal basis for this. Well, somebody's got to defend it against that lawsuit, and it's the Attorney General. So if you're wondering, yeah, the Attorney General can't or doesn't, you know, he has a say in this. And he was saying that there are limitations to this, that you can't just willy-nilly go forward with this. At some point, we're going to have to roll some of these restrictions back. It would be better, I think, for the governor just to say, we get to this number, this benchmark, we get to this point, then we will say, all right, we're going to open back up to 50% or 60% or 70% capacity. But it's not clear to me that there's really any kind of plan in place. That's where I think it leaves much to be desired, is that, yeah, we know we need to do something, but we're just trying things. And particularly, I think for a lot of you listeners out there may not have been in a bar at 10:59 p.m. and said, you know, it seems early to be closing down. When does that get rolled back? When do things like that go the other direction? Now, the ABC board in Alabama seems to kind of rule like it's a, it's a dictatorship, and what they say is go, because it's alcohol, anything alcohol-related. We have the final say in that. But what's the does there even have to be a legal basis for that? So a lot of you probably thinking, well, we elect a government. The ABC board is part of the executive branch. It's not extra, you know, governmental. Although I think a lot of people on the ABC board think that they are, that they don't really answer to anybody. But at some point, they gotta make the case for why they're deciding to force places to shut down at 11 p.m. It's always curious to me. I guess at 11:01, you're more vulnerable to to COVID-19. I don't know that there needs that there is much of a scientific reason, but they don't think that they need to offer that to you. So let's see how far this goes. People are there's a lot of people out there that are reluctant to criticize Governor Ivey for her decisions, for her mandates, but I think as long as things are working, what can you say? And the numbers seem to be going in a good direction. So she could say, hey, I know what I'm doing here. Until that doesn't be... If that remains to be the case, then we'll have to address this question at a later time. Let's take a time out here, get some commercials in. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Was the finest pickup to ever play the blues. You got to know when to hold up. Know when to fold up. Know when to walk away. And know when to run.
And welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Still to come on the program today. In the next hour, we'll hear from Baron Coleman, radio host up in Auburn, and from Yellowhammer News, Sean Ross. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But joining us now, I'm very excited to bring on my next guest. He's running, well, he is the United States Senator, but he's running for re-election on November 3rd. U.S. Senator Doug Jones joins us on the line. Senator, how are you this morning? Senator, are you there? All right,
well, I'm here, Jeff. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
As I move around, I mute and I forget to unmute sometimes. But thanks for having me this morning, and I'm happy to follow you around in your new gig. Congratulations.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, and someday I'll tell you how you were like one of the first guests I had filling in for radio up in Huntsville, and it impressed them so much that they decided to give me a radio show in Huntsville, and now here I am today. A bona fide radio host. Thank you for that.
Well, it's my pleasure, Jeff. It's always good to be with you.
Senator, let's get right into it. You spoke at the Democratic National Convention. Just your thoughts on the convention to date, how things are going along given these circumstances.
Well, it's been unusual for sure. I mean, you know, I'd always dreamed that one day I would get a chance to address a convention, and I did, but it was virtual. There was no bright lights and thousands of people, but I think the convention has gone off incredibly well. I think they did a wonderful job of producing it. The roll call last night was just amazing, the roll call of states. I thought if you saw the Edmund Pettus Bridge lit up in blue, and I just think it's gone well. You've seen such a diversity of voices from, you know, all the way from Bernie Sanders to Republicans like John Kasich, who and a lot of folks in between there about this ticket. So I am very pleased with the way the convention is going thus far.
Yeah, and you know, just the feedback from what you've been hearing, are your fellow Democrats, they seem to be on board with what's going on?
I think everybody is excited about this ticket, but I will tell you, Jeff, I've also heard from a lot of others. I've heard from a lot of independents. I've heard a lot from a lot of moderate Republicans who helped me in 2017. And there's an excitement out here about an alternative, and the ticket of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, both of whom are friends of mine, and it's just an excitement out there that I think we haven't really seen in a while in Alabama, and I'm very pleased with the way things are rolling out.
Talk about that decision to make Senator Harris, Joe Biden making her his running mate. You served with her in the United States Senate. You must know her well. Give me your thoughts on that.
I think it's an outstanding choice. I think out of all of those, you know, he narrowed this choice down about two or three that any one would have been a great choice. But I think Kamala represents both a level of experience, a unifying voice, and a bridge to a younger generation that is absolutely needed right now. And her nomination would have been historic in any event. But I think in this moment where we are coming to grips with the racial inequalities in this country, I think it speaks a lot about the Democrats. I think it speaks a lot about the ticket, and Kamala is just a fabulous choice and is energizing so many people across the country and here in Alabama.
Well, let's get to here in Alabama, your race. You face Republican nominee Tommy Tuberville on November 3rd. How is the campaign going? How is it particularly campaigning now that we're kind of in the home stretch here under this pandemic?
Well, we feel great about where this campaign has been, where it is now, and where it's going. Yes, we're doing a lot of virtual. I'm still not getting out very much. We're going to reassess that. I heard you mention our numbers are going down, which is a great thing. I think people are wearing those masks and social distancing, and hopefully that will continue to go down and we can reassess how much to move around. But we feel very good about where we are in this race. I mean, I've got 2.5 years of what I believe is a very, very good record for the people of Alabama, from my seat on the Armed Services Committee to banking to health. And where we are now, the things that we've been able to do in a very bipartisan way to get things done for the people of Alabama. So we're excited about it. It's going to be a tough race. We know that. We've always run as an underdog. But the fact is, I think that people recognize what I've done in the last 2.5 years, going on 3, is really what our campaign is about, and that's One Alabama for everybody in every zip code, no matter who you are, no matter where you are.
Well, you know, we're talking election here, and you know, Democrats, particularly for your success, I would think that you want to get that turnout up as much as possible. We seem to be consumed with the Postal Service right now in the news cycle. Maybe not as big a deal in Alabama, maybe it is. Just kind of your thoughts on the general election and the role the United States Postal Service is going to play in it under this president.
Well, I think that the Postal Service is going to play an outsized role this year, not because of this president, but because we are in the middle of a pandemic. And while our numbers are going down, it is still going to be out there. The virus is not going to be completely controlled. We will not have a vaccine. And I've heard from so many people that are concerned about their ballot. They want to make sure they get it right. Alabama's got a tough absentee ballot process, so everybody that needs to do that needs to be thinking about it now to get it right. I think we're going to see an unusually high number of absentee ballots. You know, Jeff, there are places in the state, and I don't have all the lists, but there will be places in the state that will take absentee ballots ahead of the election day in person. You know, County Courthouse here in Jefferson County does that, and there'll be others. So I'm hoping that we will make sure that we get folks, you know, registered, get them re-registered, and get them to understand the absentee ballot process. But, you know, the Postal Service thing is more than just about the election. There are so many people, and especially in our rural areas, veterans that depend on the Postal Service for their, you know, life-saving medications, Social Security checks, other retirement checks. Not everybody uses direct deposit. And so the Postal Service changes that we saw this summer have really had an impact, especially in rural America. So I'm glad to see that there is now something in the works to make sure that we get the House back in order leading up to the election. We can get more money there, but we got to get this Postal Service straightened out, not just for an election, but for the people of America.
I mean, and maybe I don't use the Postal Service as much, but do you think there are systemic issues there?
Oh, there's no question. There's no question if you've seen anything about what's been going on. Mail has been stacking up. This new Postmaster General has cut out any potential overtime at a time when the mail was being used more, even during this pandemic. Not everybody uses emails. Not everybody uses text messages, and the mail is still used tremendously. Again, prescription drugs, checks. There have been issues across this country where mail is stacked up, sorting machines have been removed to make it more, in an effort to streamline costs, sorting machines that make the mail move more efficiently have been removed. Drop boxes have been moved and stored in different places. And so, yeah, there has been some real problems across this country. We have seen some in Alabama, not as much as in other places, but we have seen some, and it was only going to get worse had the Postmaster General not reversed course yesterday and said he was not going to do anything to implement changes that might have the effect of slowing down the mail.
And back home in Alabama here, we talked about the absentee balloting. Do you feel the election system we have here in Alabama is in a good place?
No, absolutely not. It is too restrictive. There is no reason to be as restricted as it is. You can combat fraud. You know, you only have to look at other states that allow more mail-in votes with a signature and today's technology that can match up signatures where you don't have to try to find a notary public or two witnesses to notarize something. You can match it up and you don't have to get a photocopier in your home or go to a store somewhere to get a photocopy of your photo ID. There's a lot of technology that's out there right now, Jeff, that's relatively easy to implement that can make our election safe, It could make them secure, and we could get more people. If people could vote in the security of their own home by mail, I think that's the way to do it. The other thing that we need to do, there's no reason we can't have early voting in Alabama, at least a 2 or 3 week period, and not be dependent on the weather and other things. People can come at their leisure instead of having to take time off from work, stand in line for an hour or two or maybe longer to try to vote. We should be making it as easy as possible. And in today's world, we can do it securely and make it safe. There's no question about that. You only have to look at what's going on. Colorado is probably the best, and Utah are the two best examples. Mail-in votes, not a problem. My son lived out there for a couple years, got his vote in the mail, filled it out, signed it, not a problem. Went right back. And the voting percentages go up when you do that. And that's the key. Regardless of who you're going to vote for, we need to make it easier for people to vote and get those numbers up higher. Alabama continues to be near the bottom of voting percentage, and we need to change that.
Are you worried about that, COVID-19? We did do the, these primary election or the runoff election under these circumstances, and it didn't seem as if there were many hitches, but I guess the general election is going to be such a bigger deal on November 3rd. Are you concerned about COVID-19 in November 3rd?
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, we don't know where we'll be in November 3rd. Hopefully, we're going to be in an even better place than we are now. But remember, we only had about 17% of the electorate that turned out for the runoffs in July. And you got to figure we're going to at least get above 50%. So that means that those numbers are going to triple, probably, at least triple, maybe even more. I'd love to see it even more, by the way. I want to get it as high as we can get. So, yeah, I'm concerned about it. I'm concerned about people having to take off, stand in line. The Secretary of State says you don't have to wear a mask. That's fine if he wants to say that. But we dang sure should wear a mask. That we've been able to show, I think, after 30 days of a mask order, that it has an effect. So I think everybody's concerned about it. It's why we need to educate people that if they want to vote absentee, here's the way to do it. You know, there's still a couple of lawsuits pending. That could provide a little bit of relief. We'll just have to see.
Joined by United States Senator Doug Jones here on the program. Senator, big topic on this show. We've been talking about a lot of football season, college football season. Plays a big role in Alabama's culture. Looking at what you see right now, particularly with Auburn University and the University of Alabama, the SEC decided to go forward, to go ahead. Well, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think it's a good plan, or do you have any concerns?
Well, I've got concerns, but at the same time, I think that, you know, look, there's nobody that wants to have college football more than I do. I love it every fall. It is just an incredible part, and as you said, it's part of our culture. I know this from my discussions with folks at Alabama, Auburn, and UAB. They're doing all of these incredible things. They've got the resources to try to keep their players healthy, to try to keep their coaches healthy. And I think that they're doing a really good job of doing that. The SEC is going to play. They delayed the season start till September 26th, which is, I think, was a very smart move to do in order to try to see where we are with this virus. Now I saw the University of Alabama has decided that they would only go with about 20% capacity, which means just over 20,000 fans. You know, under the circumstances, I think that that is probably a safe move, too. But even though it's going to hurt the economies of Alabama, Tuscaloosa and Auburn and others, but hopefully as this season progresses, Jeff, if we can do the things necessary. Now, I started saying this, and even the governor said this back in April when she issued her first order. What we do now in trying to stay safe and healthy will depend, it will be solely help us decide whether or not we can have any semblance of a college football season. It's absolutely true. So if we can continue to see numbers go down and we can continue to see better things in getting the virus control, who knows what may happen by October or November as the season progresses, and hopefully things can loosen up. I sure hope so. I really do hope so, but I know people have to follow the science and do things that's in the best interest of their communities, the university community, as well as the greater community of the state.
But you feel like there's that possibility, at least, that here we're going to start out at point A, that by we get into October, November, as the season progresses, that maybe we can at least consider, if things are going in a good direction, to loosen some of the restrictions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the SEC, ACC, I think these schools are being smart in trying to do those things that they can look as where we are right now and where we're likely to be in September. But it's always going to be a reevaluation. They said that early on. I think that's a smart move. They're listening to scientists too. They're listening to the healthcare professionals, and that's what's important. So if I'm absolutely convinced that if we can do those things necessary, they can potentially loosen those restrictions. But I'm going to tell you, Jeff, in all candor, if we continue to see photographs of kids at bars and hanging out the way they've done without masks at Alabama and Auburn, it's going to be a harder sell to do that, because we're getting into flu season, and the combination of flu season and COVID could be extremely dangerous. So let's not make that happen. Let's do those things. It's going to be a different season, but let's do our part. We're all in this together. Let's do our part. Let's enjoy college football.
And finally, Senator, I know this is an issue you've been working on since you've been in office, since you've been elected, expanding Medicaid. Missouri voted by referendum to expand their Medicaid rolls. Any movement on that? Anything you could talk about on that end?
Well, I'll tell you, Jeff, it's really frustrating because I'm still running into a brick wall with my Republican colleagues in Washington, D.C. They don't want to do anything that would be perceived as giving any kind of legitimacy to the Affordable Care Act, which has now been the law for over 10 years. And it's unfortunate, but we're still pushing. We're still trying to see, because it would bring in so much money and give health care now to so many more people than when we started this pandemic. I've had a number of discussions with folks in Montgomery. I think folks are absolutely open to this discussion now and to maybe do something, but we've got to do something from the federal government to give them incentives, because budgets are going to be tight. I get that. I appreciate that. It's a shame we didn't do it when we had the opportunity. We've lost out on billions of dollars. But we're still going to keep plugging. You know me, we've talked about it so many times. I'm not going to get off of the soapbox about expanding Medicaid and giving health care to so many people in this state that need it, that work, that just can't qualify for it right now, but still don't have the money to get good health insurance. And helping keep our rural hospitals open, even, you know, for those that are not on Medicaid, it keeps those hospitals and doctors close by.
And, Senator, wrapping up on this, folks want to find out more about what's going on in your Senate office or on the campaign side. Tell them where they could go.
I appreciate it, Jeff. You know, the Senate office, and we've been involved with a lot of casework over the last few months especially. If you've had any issues and any problems with getting your loan, your unemployment, we're there to try to do what we can to help. That's for individuals. It's for businesses. Either one, you let us know. You can go on our website at jones.senate.gov. Shoot us a message. We're still working virtually, but we'll be back in touch. Campaign-wise, stay tuned to DougJones.com, and we're going to be ramping everything up as much as we can over the next 70-something days.
Senator, as always, thanks for making time for us.
Hey, Jeff, it's always a pleasure. Take care.
All right, that was nice. Hey, Senator Doug Jones on the program. We got to take a timeout. I'll get a commercial in here, too. We will be right back. This is the Jeff Porsche Show at FM Talk 106.5.
A couple guys in first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles. Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight.
Oh, mama, can this really be the end?
Welcome back to the Jeff Porsche Show at FM Talk 106.5. 57 minutes after the hour on this Wednesday morning. Still to come on the program, Baron Coleman, a friend of mine, does radio as well, will join us. That's in the next segment. And from Yellowhammer News, Editor-in-Chief Sean Ross, our usual Wednesday guest, will be with us. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Real quick before we go to the top of the hour here, watching the Democratic National Convention last night, you got 60 seconds for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to speak. And it was during that portion where they were talking about the nominees getting set up for that state-by-state roll call of the nominees. But AOC only 60 seconds. And you watch the media, and she is she's a star, the future of the Democratic Party.
Hey, I was country.
Maybe not the star. Maybe they like that image of her. But the ideology stuff, we don't really need all that crazy socialist stuff. Let's just Just get on camera for us. That's all we want you to do. How's that for democratic philosophy? Got to take a time out. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.